If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Welcome to Steve Bertrand on Books. Each week in this spot, we'll talk to one of the leading authors of the day, and I'll do my best to try to keep you updated on the world of reading. For example, did you know there's a science to reading? It's good for you. Reading is good for you. We all know that. We learn things, but it's also a calming factor in your life. But sometimes we just lose our groove. Well, we'll help you get the groove back just a little bit later. But first, author Brad Meltzer is here with a new thriller. It's called The Viper. It's his first thriller in 4 years. Brad, how are you?
I'm good. So happy to be back.
Listen, so is this the best book you've ever written?
I think it's the most honest I've ever written. That's what I firmly believe that. And so to me, it is the best one. I want every book, you know, like every writer, when you write your first book, everyone's like, oh, I love that person's first book. And then why? Because the writer has no idea that anyone's ever going to read it. You're getting all their love and their need that I got to put down this story, even though no one's paying me for it. That's how much I need to tell this story right now. And then you put your second book out and now you know what it's like when people review you, good ones, bad ones. People are watching. You just don't dance the same when people are watching. And I think it took me, I'm not joking, like a couple of decades to get back to that point where I was like, I don't care what you, you know, want to do. I'm going to be myself again in front of you. And so I think this book is, I think the characters are just much more emotionally real. And that's why it's, I mean, we've never gotten in the trade press, you know, like Variety in movies. In books, there's three things. There's Publishers Weekly, there's Library Journal. Like usually you get one good one and two bad ones, or two good ones and one bad review. We got 3 for 3. I have never gotten 3 for 3 in 25 years. Great reviews.
I ask because I talked to an author once. It was David Guterson, Snow Falling on Cedars. And he said that the next book he writes is always his best one.
You have to be. You got to be trying to get better.
You think so? And then
I don't think it always is your best one. I think there are a lot. Listen, I'm going to be honest. I think there are a lot of writers who phone it in and they're tired. One of the most famous writers, thriller writers in the whole world, said to me once about their famous character, if I need to write this character again, I want to put a gun in my mouth. And that person will be far more successful than I will ever be, but I don't want that person's life for anything. I love the fact that I love my characters and I can't wait to tell you the next thing about them.
You said it was the most honest, and that has to do with your dad. Explain that to me.
You know, the last words that are in this book that I put in the book were the first ones you read. It's a quote I found at the very end. It says, I don't believe in closure. I'm not sure we ever get over anything. And my dad was a pretty, like, just poor education, you know, had a rough life. And my dad, when I was in college, they kicked me out of college because my bills weren't paid. And then we had to get loans that were quickly done. And so we got a 1% loan and quicksand became solid ground. You know, things would go crazy, would calm down. But one time when I graduated University of Michigan, I changed my home address and suddenly all my mail started getting forwarded. And I quickly got $40,000 of credit card bills came to my house that were opened in my name. None of them that I opened. That's how my dad was paying for college. He was basically, you know, those offers they give every college kid saying, hey, sign up for a credit card, kid. My dad signed up and took every single one of them. Never told me. And it's such a dumb plan, Steve, because he's getting a credit card as a 22% interest rate. He could have had a 1% loan. And they told me the only way I could get out of it is I got to report my dad to the authorities. I got to testify against him. It was fraud. And I'm like, I'm not ratting out my own dad. So I make deals with all the companies. We make long-term payments, the whole thing. Again, quicksand becomes solid ground. But eventually you start getting hit in the back of the head enough. You start looking over your shoulder. And here's the part that I missed about that story I just told you that I didn't see. And I told this story at my dad's funeral, but when my dad was a little kid, he used to get beat up by his own dad, who was a boxer in the military. I know for sure that my dad used to jump in front of his younger brother and take the hits for him so his younger brother won't get hit. He jumped in front of my grandmother, his own mother, so his mother won't get hit. And I couldn't see that that's what he was doing for me. He was trying to take the financial hit for me so I didn't have to take it, so that I could be the first one in my immediate family to go to a 4-year college and get out. But I couldn't see that part of the story because I was so annoyed at the headache he was causing me, the heartache he was bringing me, all the stuff that I was like, Dad, that's such a dumb plan. I couldn't see his good intention. And I say all that to simply say, when I was writing The Viper, I think that I think closure is overrated. And I think to me, what you have to do is love yourself for who you are. Not just love your good parts, but love your bad parts, love your bad relatives as well as your good ones. And I think the book, as I was writing and I got to the end, I was like, oh, this is me trying to forgive my dad. And that's why it was the most honest for me.
Were you reconciled with him when he died?
I was. I wasn't that stupid. I knew, as a person who loves history, you don't let your dad die without leaving the stuff unsaid. So he knew I loved him. I knew he loved me. That was not the issue. I don't even think I realized. When my mom died and my dad died, I was writing books to deal with it, figure out how to get over it.
The President's Shadow, right? The President's
right,
Shadow.
Right, was one, right. I'd write a character and who lost their mother when my mom died. When my dad died, I wrote a character who lost their dad. I'm not a complex guy. Like, what I was dealing with was pretty clear on the page. I don't think I realized that I still, even though I'd gotten, you know, I said goodbye to him when we loved each other, I don't think I realized I never forgave him for all the headache and heartache he caused me. And that was coming out in The Viper. That's where it was like, you know, every character in The Viper is kind of is dealing with their past. They're looking at their past. They're living in their past. And I'm like, why is this issue so? And then I was like, oh, that's where I am. I'm back here.
And you, so that's your case then. Your subconscious was telling that story and you consciously had to catch up.
Yeah. And that's what every book is. When I get to the end of the book, I'm like, what am I dealing with these past 2 years? We all think we're so smart as writers that we make the characters do what we want, but the characters can only be some version of what we know, right? They don't have to be us, of course, but there's some version. And my characters were struggling with these things that I'm like, oh, that's what I was struggling with. I got it. Like, you know, so welcome to my free therapy, Steve.
Are you ever told by one of your readers what the book is about and it's true and you didn't see it?
I was, not anymore, I think. Well, I'll tell you as the book is out more. When my third novel came out, some stranger on the internet wrote me an email, I'll never forget it, and said, I've read 3 of your books now, Brad. What are your issues with your father? Not one of those 3 books had a father character that was major in it. Not one. I didn't even write a dad because I was so young at the time. I didn't know how to write a dad. I didn't write dads until I had kids. But when I got that, I was like, oh no, what was that? What am I putting in these books that I don't even realize? And it's lines here. It's lines there. It's little things. It's little perspectives on life. And that's where the theme always is.
Tell me about The Viper, because Zig and Nola are here. They both are looking back. There's a sheriff involved looking back as well. Tell me a little bit about the story.
It's a very simple story. A man walks into a funeral home carrying his favorite blue suit. He's got a terminal disease, and this is the suit he wants to be buried in. But here's the thing, Steve. If you go to your local bank and you open up a safety deposit box, paperwork gets filed. It means the government, if they want to, can track it. Same thing if you go to the UPS store and you open up a P.O. box. But if you secretly sew something into the lining of your suit and you hand that suit to your local mortician, you have an ultimate untraceable hiding spot. And from there, the man goes back to his hotel room, leaves the funeral home. And in the hotel room, there's a guy waiting with a gun, says, where is it? And says, I don't know what you're talking about. Guy shoots him dead. That suit is still in the funeral home. You won't believe what's hidden inside it or who's about to find it. And that's chapter 1 of The Viper. You don't need to read any of the other books to understand it. You can just jump into that one. But that's the beginning.
And I think the wasn't In Excess, Simple Minds that was playing in the background, right? Don't You Forget About Me? What's
that's
that
it,
about
baby.
The Breakfast Club?
So, you know, and again, I didn't even know I was doing it. And in the opening scene is Hall & Oates is playing in the background. In the middle of it, one of the secret groups you find out, their code name is The Breakfast Club. There's a scene with, as you said, Don't You Forget About Me. There's a scene in the end with Betty Davis Eyes. And I was like, and again, it takes me 2 to 3 years to write a novel. When I was looking at the whole thing, I'm like, wait a minute. Why is everything trapped here in the 80s? What's going on here? And then I realized that's what everyone was doing. They were all dealing with it. And so that's where I started to be able to figure out my own chaos.
All right. I got to ask you something here. There's a sheriff in the story that I mentioned, and he's protective of his daughter. And there's a scene, one of the pivotal scenes in the book, really, in his office. And you write on his desk or on his bookshelf. You know where I'm going?
I know what's on it. Yep. Keep going.
It is a Brad Thor book. Why is that there?
So here's the great insight. So there are jokes that go back and forth in novels that nobody knows about. And 4 years ago, someone writes me an email that says, hey, man, Brad Thor has in his book, someone's reading a Brad Meltzer novel. And Brad and I are old friends. We met each other when our first books came out. And,
I'm going to interrupt you there, because I interviewed you before you had met him. And I think you asked me if I knew him, because he had reached out to
you. Because he was in Chicago.
Yeah. And he had reached out to you.
Were you the one who introduced us?
I didn't introduce you, but we talked about it before it happened, because you didn't know from him.
He was very kind. I met him. Yeah, I mean, again, it was like one of my earliest books. I mean, I've been talking to you for so long, too. And he put a character reading a Brad Meltzer book in his book. And James Patterson, I think James Patterson did too. And I owe Jim as well, but I paid back Brad Thor. And so he was very sweet. And he was actually just on the Today Show, and they asked him what books he recommended. And he picked The Viper. And so I wrote to him and said, hey, man, thank you. And he said, surprise. And I said, surprise is on you. Look what the character's reading in my book now. And so we were
laughing.
That's
so funny. You write that writing mysteries are thrillers, rather, the house you build with your own hands. What does that mean?
When I do a book like The Nazi Conspiracy, about a secret plot to kill FDR and Stalin and Churchill to hide a World War II, right? Or I do the JFK conspiracy book. I have to figure out, obviously there's a story there, but if I want to know what happens next, I just see what JFK did next, see what FDR and Churchill did next, and then I tell the story. The story is already there. It exists in the known universe. But with a novel, is the only place I sit down and I go, chapter one, and the page is blank. There's nothing to follow. If you don't put it down, it does not exist. So to me, you have to build every single part of it. There's nothing to lean on.
It seems to me that most writers I'm aware of write in a singular fashion for the most part. And you have got to be one of the most versatile writers I know, in that you've written, created TV shows, you've written nonfiction TV shows. You write the I Am series for children, thrillers here. Is it difficult to switch hats or switch dance floors?
Maybe it is, and I'm just lying to myself. I think I like it. I mean, to me, I don't look at it and go like, oh man, I need like all this time off to switch gears. I will say the kids' books I write in one sitting, like I'll block out a chunk of time, a couple of weeks, and I have to do it start to finish because it's just a tight little project. A novel, the fun of it to me is that it evolves over time. I once plotted my second novel I ever wrote. I plotted the whole book from page one to the last page. Every twist, every turn, everything. It was the worst writing experience I ever had, because it was just like playing connect the dots. It was like one to two to three. There was nothing fun. What I like is when I'm 3 months into something and I'm in the shower and I'm like, wait a minute. No. She's sleeping with him. They're in love. She's cheating on her husband. That's what the backstabbing. And then it evolves and I figure stuff out. And that's the fun of the novel. So I like having those little breaks away from it as like development time in my brain to figure out those turns.
Well, this one's The Viper, and I certainly enjoyed reading it very much. And I'm looking at you on a Zoom call, and over your shoulder, I see a hotel parking lot. You're on the road. Or is it a roof?
Yeah, where no, a hotel parking lot. I'm on a Marriott in St. Louis. I got my barbecue. I just had that. Yeah. I got two more stops. I got St. Louis tonight. I got Toledo tomorrow and Cleveland the next day, and then I get to take a nap.
You like it?
I don't like traveling anymore. I love talking to readers who read the book. And the best part of book tour in the second week is people read it now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really fun. Like, you go on day one and people just take your word for it. This is what's going to happen. But on week two, the people who really read it. And we did a thing for this book where if you signed up on our, you know, we have a mailing list on our website, where we've sent people, when you sign up, secret decoder rings. We gave them like ways to crack certain codes, like from the old cereal boxes. We gave them playing cards. This year, we did Viper tattoos. So if you signed up and you pre-ordered the book, you got a free Viper tattoo we mailed you. And the rule was, is if you wore the Viper tattoo to the book sign, you cut the line. And I jokingly said, well, it's just a matter of time on a radio show. I said, until someone does a Viper tramp stamp. And sure enough, in Virginia, two Viper tramp stamps came. And then one guy said to me at another stop, if I make this tattoo permanent, can I forever cut the line at your book signs? I said, brother, you make that permanent, you can come to the front every single time. So that's the fun part of tour. Our readers are the absolute best.
You know, you're my favorite. It's great to talk to you. And I wish you luck in St. Louis and Toledo, and then enjoy that nap.
I appreciate it, brother. Thanks, Steve.
That's Brad Meltzer, back on the shelf this year. The name of his...
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
This new book is The Viper. Okay, you having trouble with those bookshelves? Maybe you can't get into reading? Well, you know, there's actually a science behind your reading habit, and Adithi Ramakrishnan wrote about that recently for the Associated Press. Adithi, welcome.
Hi, so happy to be here.
So we're reading less than we used to, is that correct?
Yes, that is right. So researchers have done studies basically on the American Time Use Survey, how people spend their time, and have found that on an average day, people are reading less than they were two decades ago.
And why do you think that is?
Yeah, so I talked to experts and also just readers for a bunch of different reasons on this. One reason is people are used to reading a lot of books in school, assigned books, high school and college. And then when they get out into the world, they just feel a little bit burnt out from that. They just don't really know where to start or don't feel like reading anymore. Another big reason that people mentioned is just that it's just a lot easier sometimes when you come home from a day at work to just scroll on your phone for hours and hours. The idea of picking up a book can feel like a little bit more work, especially when people don't really know where to start.
And the we talk so much about being stressed out by our phones or by everyday life. Actually, reading can help that, right?
Yeah, totally. So there have been research studies that show that reading can make people more creative, boost empathy, help people relate to one another. So there definitely are some benefits in terms of helping you just calm down and, you know, have a better time.
And so you wrote this piece for the AP, and one of the first bits of advice I think is great, because I take advantage of this as well. It's important to choose the right book when you want to kick off, right? So I have a few series that I read. For some reason, I like Victorian mystery novels, and
nice.
There are a few writers who write about that specifically that I've read. And if I'm sort of sliding away from the reading habit, I pick up one of those because it's safe ground, it's comfortable, and I know I'm going to be okay.
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like that's great advice from the people that I talked to. They said, you know, pick something that is going to be joyful. Don't pick this 1,000-page book that's going to be really hard for you to get through. Try something that maybe feels a little bit low effort, that you'll be able to kind of ease into and, you know, get back into working that habit again.
You'll put James Joyce on the shelf for a while until you pick up your speed.
Maybe hold off on that one for a little bit.
The other thing that I've taken advantage of, and you write about it, is I think probably a lot of people don't realize you can go to your library and they can, here comes the word of the 21st century, curate a reading list for you.
Yes, 100%. I spoke to several librarians who were super excited to, I mean, they get questions like this all the time, you know, how can I get back into reading? And they're super excited to even ask, you know, what's the last book that you read that you remember really enjoying? And if you haven't read in a while, think about maybe movies or TV shows. And you can look for those similar genres, whether that's science fiction, fantasy. A lot of movies and TV are based on books too. So there's a lot of different ways that you can kind of find your way back in, even thinking about the kinds of content that you enjoy normally.
My library has a questionnaire where you fill it out about what you like to read, what's interesting to you, and they come back with a list of 10 books to try. It's fantastic.
Yeah, that's awesome. And one of the librarians I talked to too suggested a site called Novelist, which a lot of libraries do have access to through your library card, where if you type in a book or an author that you like, it'll actually suggest these read-alikes for you. So kind of put in a little bit of that legwork so that you can just open the book and start reading.
Now, Adithi, here's my problem. I like to play Wordle while I read. Is that a bad idea?
I mean, I guess what works for you, right? I mean, the attention span experts I talked to did say, you know, if you can, try to keep your phone away from you, distractions, you know, the TV on, things like that while you're trying to read, because obviously when your attention is split in all these different places, it can make it a little bit harder to focus on the book in front of you. But of course, everyone's reading experience is different. Now there's a lot of books that you can access on your phone, you know, ebooks, audiobooks, things like that. So if it makes more sense to incorporate those into your daily life, you know, reading an ebook on your commute or audiobook while doing chores, you know, that's still a great idea too, whatever it takes to get you reading.
Do you read ebooks or just the old-fashioned hardcover types?
I am kind of like a physical book purist. I mean, I do love the feeling of turning the pages, but I will say I do enjoy audiobooks for doing dishes or chores. So that is something that I've incorporated a little bit more just to have something going to kind of take my mind off of doing the work, honestly.
Yeah, you know, I finally, for the first time, read an ebook last week. And I'm like, oh, there's something to this. I get it now a little bit. I mean, I always want to hold the book. I want to see the cover. I want to count the pages. But there's great convenience. And it turns out, as typical, I'm about 15 years behind everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, I do love the feeling of like closing the book and feeling that physical sense of accomplishment when you have finished it. But I will say one thing I do like is a lot of audiobooks are narrated by the author, especially if it's a memoir. And I do find that sometimes that can add an added level of kind of processing and hearing the author tell their story in their own words.
Okay, so we're talking about books. We talk to authors every week. And it seems to me to be more or less a solitary thing. I mean, there are book clubs, of course. The one thing I don't get is this new phenomenon of silent book clubs, right? Can you explain that for me?
Yeah, totally. I've actually been to a couple as well. So I've got some personal experience here too. But basically the idea is if you want to read, it's almost like you have this group of accountability partners with you. You can go to this book club. Everyone brings their own book. There's no pressure to all be reading the same thing. You can chat for a little bit. You don't have to, but everyone just sits, opens up their book and just silent reads together. And the idea is, no, go for it.
I'm sorry, Aditi Ramakrishnan is with the science writer for the Associated Press, and she writes about the science of reading. Okay, take me to your bookshelf. What do you read?
Yeah, absolutely. So honestly, I kind of read a bunch of different things. I do love a good contemporary romance. I do like some sci-fi, and I do read nonfiction every now and again. It honestly kind of depends on what my brain feels like digesting at the end of the day.
And you can pick up a book sometimes that looks, it's funny because the phrase is you can't judge a book by its cover. And yet that's how we choose our books by and large, I think. And it's hard for me, and I'm going to pursue this in subsequent weeks, but I torture myself by continuing to read books I'm not even interested in because I feel like it's failure if I don't finish. I would imagine that's counterproductive.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's something that I struggle with too, because I do feel like following through when I'm stuck in something. But if you're someone who's trying to get back into reading and you haven't for a while, experts do say if you're reading a book and it's just not doing it for you, it's okay to put that one down. I mean, reading is supposed to be fun. So if the book is not fun, close it, put it away, find one that's going to pique your interest a little bit more. And that's okay. The book gods will forgive you.
Aditi Ramakrishnan, the science writer for the Associated Press. It was great to meet you. Pick up some more book topics for you, and maybe we can talk again in the future.
Yeah, I'd love that. It was a pleasure.
So what are you reading these days? You know, you can always drop me a note at stevebertrandonbooks@gmail.com. I don't know if you're like me, but I have a terrible time putting a book down once I've started reading it. Even if I don't like the book or I don't like the writing, I don't like the font, I fight through it because I feel like I'm a failure if I don't finish it. It's kind of crazy because it keeps me, or maybe it keeps you, from reading other things that you do enjoy or would like. We'll take that on coming up next week on the podcast. And we'll have a chat with Charles Finch, the writer behind the Charles Lennox series. Charles Lennox is a Victorian England private investigator. He was a member of Parliament, upper class, and then he deigns to take on this disrespected profession. It's a great series. I learn a lot about England when I read it, and he had a book Charles Finch did last year that really was one of the bigger hits of 2025. We'll talk to him coming up next week. Until then, I'm Steve Bertrand, sending you my best.